I run.
You know, it is. Ms. Battle asked the same question when we started talking about running for governor. She said, "You know, you've done so well here in the Huntsville area. You've brought in jobs. You've worked on education and improved our education system. You've brought in roads and brought in infrastructure and all the things that you have to do. And we've got a great quality of life here." Said, "Why would you run for governor?" And that is a great question for someone. And the whole key comes down to the same reason I ran for mayor. Ran for mayor so we could make our community a better place, and we could actually work on education. We could work on infrastructure. We could work and bring in jobs. And you know, in the end result is we brought in. We brought in about 24,000 jobs. We brought in $3 billion worth of investment into the community. And beyond that, we brought in a quality of life so that people wanted to be part of our community. And that's the same thing I want to do for the state of Alabama. I want us to start, you know, we had a plan and strategy we started with 10 years ago. So what would happen if we took that same plan and strategy and we started working with the state and we worked to make this a better state and ease, make it a prosperous state, make it a place where, you know, young people can come and they can have a job and they can be part of our community. They can raise a family, put a roof over their head and put food on the table and be part of our prosperous society. That's what I'd like to see happen. And, you know, and I think that's why I'm running for governor.
So how do you do that? How do you take the economic success that you talked about in Huntsville and transfer that to the rest of the state?
The interesting thing is it's the same formula. You know, we worked off of our bases. We worked off of our strengths. And we can see the same thing happening in all areas of the state. Work off of our strength. We're just in Mobile. And we were talking in Mobile, and the shipbuilding industry is huge down in Mobile. And, you know, we can piggyback off of it. We went to Airbus while we were in Mobile, and Airbus is putting together components to put together huge jets. And all those components are coming from overseas. So what would happen if all of a sudden we started making maybe that fuselage, which is has a wiring harness in it and has an insulation in it, and we started doing that production in Mobile? That would add to the base of our industrial base. And you know, we as a state, you know, the whole reason to bring in jobs is maybe somebody has a job and they want a better job, and so they have that opportunity to go to the better job. But the more I think one of the most important things is to give our young people coming out of either the K-12 or coming out through two-year colleges, coming out of colleges, to have an opportunity to stay in the state, to be working in the state, and to be part of our society that is moving forward and be part of our prosperous society. If we can do that, that's probably one of the best things we can ever do.
When I think about the economy in North Alabama, one of the things that the Huntsville area benefits from is a lot of federal dollars, either directly through institutions like Redstone Arsenal or indirectly through contractors. And I could hear someone say in Wilcox County think,
sure,
that's great, but we don't have that asset.
Yeah. And, you know, that's every community has something that is an economic springboard for them. Look here in Birmingham, UAB is an economic springboard. Mobile has the port. That's an economic springboard for them. In the aeronautics business, Dothan has a medical school, which is a springboard for them. Every community has something that we can work off of, and you have to work off of your strengths. We decided 10 years ago when we came in that we wanted to diversify, and we diversified towards advanced manufacturing. First, we brought in Remington, then we brought in Polaris, then we brought in GE Aviation, then we brought in Aerojet Rocketdyne, the rocket plant, Blue Origin, and then finally Toyota Mazda, which we brought in. And each one of those was a diversification away from that idea that, you know, we were going to have all our eggs in one basket, in the federal basket. And so it's been, as we've done that, we've also kind of diversified our federal portfolio. You know, we'll have in the next couple of years 4,000 FBI agents. But each one of those is a component of us being able to grow and grow economically and offer opportunity in the state.
You've mentioned education a couple times.
Yes.
Your campaign site, you say you want to create an environment that reduces the number of students in the classroom and let teachers teach.
Let teachers teach. And Ms. Battle was a 34-year veteran, or is a 34-year veteran of the county school. She was a kindergarten teacher. And one of the most important things that we have to do is we have to make sure that we have a great education system. That's square one. You have to check that off before you can ever do any economic development. As industries came in, Polaris came in, they said, "What, can you provide us a career-ready student coming out of your schools?" We had to be able to say answer yes. And they said, "When our executives move here, will they want to put their young people in your schools?" And we had to be able to say yes to that. To do that, you got to have an accountability in your school system. Accountability means that you test at the front end, you test at the back end, you make sure that you get a year's worth of advancement out of a year's worth of education and instruction. You've also got to make sure that your schools are ready, you know, that we have all the technical ideas that you have to have. We put in digital education. We put in started coding in second grade. We started doing some things that, you know, a lot of people say, why would you worry about a digital education? I mean, if you work at McDonald's, you work at Walmart today, you're working on a computer system. Those are very important for us to be able to move into that 21st century workforce.
How do you do that? How do you make sure you have a quality education system? Because it's great to say you have you need that, but how do you do it?
You know, we did it in our area, and there's no one-size-fits-all because every community is going to have to come up with what fits them. And as we did it in ours, you know, the testing told us if we were getting a year's worth of advancement out of a year's worth of instruction. And then you could put all that, everybody who was tested together, and you could see if the schools were getting a year's worth of advancement out of a year's worth of instruction. And then you could see if the system was too. As you do that, you have some measurable components that measure the success of our students in that classroom.
Well, if you look at the state of Alabama in terms of health indicators, be it obesity, infant mortality, it doesn't do very well.
Right.
We also have issues around, say, access to health care in rural areas.
Sure.
Do you see any role for the state in tackling those issues?
Yeah, you know, we're going to have to start looking outside the box. We can't continue to do what we've been doing and be successful at it. You know, every community has a nursing home in it. And if you have a nursing home in it, you have a medical clinic and you have nurses sitting there. You have that opportunity to have a localized clinic in your area. Rural health care is one of the most important things that we're looking at. Dothan put together the School of Osteopathic Medicine and started training their own rural doctors. Some of those practices, which are kind of outside the box thinking, is what we've got to look for the future medicine of the future. And, you know, and we've got to make sure that our hospitals, that our doctors and hospitals get the reimbursement that is the moderate and the mean throughout the nation, and don't get penalized for having too efficient an operation. That has happened time and time again with Medicaid, and it really has the end result has been it's closed down some rural hospitals that are very important to us.
Would you ever consider expanding Medicaid under the Affordable Care Act?
You know, the first thing you've got to do is Governor is make sure that you spend within your means. And that's the big question. Where is the money and do you have the money to do it? You know, our first act is going to be in the first 90 days. We're going to start a forensic audit of the state's funds. We need to know where we are. We've heard many a times that Montgomery needs more money than we hear from others that Montgomery doesn't have a budget problem, has a spending problem. So let's find out where we are. And then let's take it out to the people and let the people see. There's some transparency. We can show them exactly where we are, where their tax dollar is and where it's being spent and where it's coming in from. Once you get to that stage, then you can make decisions on some of the other aspects of spending because a lot of people can say, we'll spend this, we'll spend that. But unless you have the money, you can't do that.
You talk a lot about infrastructure on the campaign trail, and one of the things you've said is that you didn't wait on Montgomery. You built infrastructure in Huntsville, I believe, based on a 1 cent sales tax that was passed locally.
Yeah.
but you'd be going to Montgomery. How do you deal with infrastructure and crumbling roads and bridges from the state level?
You know, that comes back to the same thing that we just talked about. You got to get, number one, you got to find out where your financial basis is and where your financial money is. But number two, you know, I mean, we're going to have to also look outside the box in that. You know, public-private partnerships, which has been pushed by the administration, the idea that you have 80% of your money is done by the federal government and then 20% is done by local, just been kind of thrown out the window with the latest stimulus package. I mean, it's actually gone the other way, you know, talking about 20 to 30% federal and then 70% local. So that means that you're going to have to get some participation, and you're going to have to look at some different means to actually do your roads. One of the things people don't realize is, you know, even if we wanted to fix I-565 or I-65 right now between Calera and north of Prattville, you know, it's a 10-year fix. So if we started fixing, we had all the money and we started fixing and doing construction on it right now, it's 2028 before we ride on it. That leaves us in somewhat a lurch before we can ever solve that problem. It's 2028. If we want to fix I-10 down in Mobile, which is definitely needed, I mean, it's a 15-year fix. So it's 2033 before we ride on the road that is to fix the problems of 2018. It shows that we just have not had the vision that we need to have in state government. And we haven't been looking ahead far enough to say, what are we going to need in the future?
When we look at the Republican Party in Alabama right now, when over the last 2 years or so, there have been ethical issues in all three branches of government. The leaders of all three branches either resigned or ousted around ethics issues. You talked about ethical issues on the campaign. Do you see this as a case of these are just particularly bad actors, or are there systemic issues that still need to be addressed in state government with ethics?
We have to regain the confidence of the public. That is that's probably one of the key issues that's going to be facing this state, regaining the confidence of the public, because we've all watched Montgomery from afar. It's not fair to Montgomery. We've all watched the state capitol from afar. And we've seen legislators down there. We've seen state officials down there. We've seen that, and you don't have a feeling that they're working in the interest of the public good. We've forgotten about public service, and we've got to get people back to where they understand the value of an elected office. That they understand that as an elected officer, they're there to be a public servant, and they're there to be someone who serves the public. Too many people are thinking that their job is it's their job, it's nobody else's. Well, that's not the way that democracy works, and you know you're not there for 16 years and all of a sudden you're guaranteed that you got a job for the next 4 to 8 years. You've got to come out and tell the people what you're going to do, how you're going to do it. You have to be transparent. You have to be open. And we haven't had that out of Montgomery. So, yeah, there needs to be some definite ethics change.
Ethics change in terms of different laws or just in terms of culture, you know, or what?
I would hope, you know, and you can't legislate right and wrong. I would hope some of us realize that what is right and what is wrong, and that we can do it. We can do some of it through the governor's office, through the bully pulpit of the governor's office, and also through just talking about having some standards in government, that we can do the right and wrong things. You know, sometimes it seems like we have so many laws that nobody knows what to follow. Well, let's just get down to the laws that we learned in Sunday school, what's right and what's wrong, and do the right thing.
Well, one specific thing I wanted to ask about in this realm is Governor Ivey signed a bill that would allow part-time economic development officials to be exempt from some state ethics laws. Do you agree with that?
It's going to have to be part of our change in our ethics. I mean, that's part of our ethics reform coming in. That law has a one-year sunset. It sunsets next year, and we've got to go back and get that law done right.
Done right in what way?
Number one, they need to be full-time economic developers. Number two, they don't need to. We need to eliminate any ability to come in for contingency fees. Somebody says, "Hey, you're coming into town. Let me go get you $10 million worth of statutory incentives because you're coming in and bringing in jobs, and I'll just charge you 30% of that." that was not what the incentives were put there for. The incentives were put there to go back to the company, to make the company, to be an investment in that company so that we could get a reinvestment back to our community. And that does not need to happen. Secondly, we need to make sure that none of that legislation is retroactive. It is legislation that goes from the time that it's passed and goes into the future. So both of those factors need to be taken into HB 317 when we readdress it next session.
One thing I did want to ask about, your bio on your campaign websites lists you as an award-winning barbecue cook.
Yes. I'm a barbecuer. Yes.
What's that about?
Before mayor, you know, there's a lot of time, we call it being before mayor. There was a lot of things we got to do, you know, and I was on a team called Oops, which was a barbecue team. And we competed in the Kansas City Barbecue Society. And we had a great time. We cooked chicken, we cooked pork, we cooked ribs, and we cooked beef brisket. And those were some of the more fun times that we had in life, sitting up all night while you were cooking your meat, expounding on the truths of all knowledge. And we were very knowledgeable by the end of that night.
Well, Mayor Tommy Battle, I appreciate your time. Anything else you'd like to add I didn't ask?
No, listen, thank you for having us in. In the next 40 to 50 days, people are going to go to the polls. They're going to be electing a governor, and they're going to be electing a lieutenant governor and an attorney general. They're going to elect the people to lead them for the next 4 years. And I think it's very important that you look for someone who has a tried and true record. I think that we have a tried and true record. We have 10 years worth of accomplishments out of what we've been able to do in the Huntsville area. And I would love to be able to take some of those skill sets that we've been able to do in Huntsville, take them to Montgomery, do them on a little bit bigger scale, and be able to do some of the same things that we were able to do in our area and do it for the whole state. The whole state deserves that prosperity.